Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
I didn't have a good life and I have a really, really nice life. I am with someone who I really love and adore, and it's changed my life because I get everything I need, and where I didn't have that.
It was like, you know, like going from black and white to colour. It was like finding out that, you know, you've won the lottery in a way, like to a child.
Action for Children needs foster carers who can help children and young people transform their lives. If you have experience working with or caring for young people and can offer a safe, caring home to a child in care, visit actionforchildren.org.uk/fostering. We offer excellent training, 24-hour support and generous fees and allowances. Do something life-changing. Foster.
Think you know about organ donation? Maybe you should think again. All the major religions in the UK support the principles of organ donation and transplantation. These include Islam, Christianity, Hinduism, Sikhism, Judaism, and Buddhism. Patients from African, Caribbean, and Asian communities make up 25% of those waiting for organ transplants. Yet, less than 2% of people on the organ donor register are from these communities. Organ transplants are more successful if the donor and recipient have the same ethnic origin. Because of a lack of suitable donors, black and Asian people may wait 3 times as long as a white person for a kidney transplant. But what can you do? You can change these facts. Register now with the Organ Donor Register by going to the link on our website, www.sheffieldlive.org, and tell your family and next of kin your wishes. They're the ones that will make sure your act of kindness happens.
Welcome to Sheffield in Focus, our weekly magazine show that's of particular interest to local people with low or no vision.
Good afternoon, this is Trina Brown and...
Don Kite.
And...
Bill Skipworth.
And Bill, I believe you've got some guests
Yeah,
today.
We have some amazing guests in the studio. And they are two people from an organisation called the Blind Veterans UK. And I've been wanting to have representatives of this charity to talk about it on the show for quite a while. Yeah. And we have succeeded. Today we have Dennis and
my
Barry.
My name's Terry Heaton. I'm Terry Heaton, Centre Manager at Blind Veterans UK.
Yep, my name's Dennis Sargent and I'm actually a member of Blind Veterans UK.
That's right. And I understand, Terry, that you are the Centre Manager.
I am.
And this place is on Forward Road, is that right?
It is, 276 Forward Road, formerly Guide Dogs for the Blind.
And I must say, you showed me around there last week, and it is a beautiful building, isn't it? It's got a lot of period features, I noticed. The wonderful winding staircase.
Built originally by a goldsmith and silver plater who made his money in the old Eastern Bloc countries, Bulgaria, East Germany. And he had the house built in 1846 originally, mm-hmm. with some additions to it later.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful place. And the staircase to which you refer to has a beautiful stained glass window on it that is absolutely
Must
to see for people visiting.
Yeah, the estate agents would definitely say period features if they were selling it. It's really.
Was it donated then to a charity?
No,
or?
Guide Dogs had it from
1995
to approximately 2005.
All right.
And when they changed direction somewhat, the charity, then known as St Dunstan's, bought it. Obviously, it had been used by a like-minded charity that worked in a similar field, and so the house had had many adaptations to make it suitable for people with visual impairment, sight loss, etc. And they did some refurbishment to make it fit St Dunstan's needs, and they opened it as St Dunstan's Sheffield in 2005.
Now I understand there's two other centres in the charity that you have.
There are. We have a centre in a place called Ovingdean, Brighton, and that's built on the edge of a cliff looking out over the English Channel, and it's built unusually in the shape of an aircraft. It actually does have a fuselage and it has wings. And it's a remarkable building.
Yeah.
And then when the charity were looking to engage with more ex-servicemen and women, and many of them coming from the north, mainly World War II veterans, it needed another centre to run its operations from, and it bought a building in a place called Craigiedon in Llandudno, and that was refurbished extensively and opened its doors in 2011.
Yeah.
Now, I know everyone listening would like to know, who are your clients? Are they people that have served in the armed forces?
They certainly are. Our members range from the young people coming back from recent conflicts in places like Afghanistan, further back beyond that to Iraq and all those conflicts. So we've got some younger members, and then we've got quite a contingent of people, average age between 80 and 85, mainly now World War II veterans. And those people are mainly the ones suffering sight loss in later life, as opposed to the younger ones who tend to have lost the site in the recent conflicts.
And I understand, Dennis, that you served in the Falklands, is that right?
Yes, I was in the Army Air Corps, so I've served all over, really, but in the Falklands and places like that, yes.
Yeah.
And I should think everybody asked you this question, what was it like fighting in the Falklands? It must have been pretty...
Well, it is. You know, it's something I talk a lot about, unfortunately, for everybody that's listening. And, but it's what I joined the forces for. It's the back end that, you know, we expected, that's what we expected we'd end up doing.
Yeah.
And although conflict's never enjoyable, it's what we do, and that's what we were trained for. And you're with people, like-minded people, and that, you know, you're with your comrades and you're with your friends. And in every conflict, every soldier, airman that or navy that you talk to, they will say the same. It's you as a group against the world in that respect.
Yeah. I know when I was seeing a program about some people that were in some of the conflict on the actual islands, and this guy was describing how the adrenaline rush was so unbelievable. It was like he'd never felt so alive in a strange sort of a way, because it was like every nerve was sort of on edge, you know, while they were in the conflict. And
it is quite a buzz.
It's a strange, I think it's a calling. I know I could never do anything like that, but my second son wants to join the army, and he's just got that, I don't know, I think it's a certain mindset. I mean, from the age of about three, he's just got that kind of, you know, I wouldn't say I want to beat people up, but you know what I mean? That urge to fight, I suppose. It's like a sort of a...
It's the discipline.
It's everything else.
And it's everything falling into place. It's what you train for.
Yeah, so, that's right, yeah.
So it's not something you particularly want to happen. You hoping it wouldn't happen.
With
politics, it's not the soldier that debates it. We just... So you go out and do what you're called to do.
Yeah.
And luckily enough, there's blind veterans. If you are unlucky enough to be wounded, you know, you get that support when you get back.
Are you registered low vision or blind?
Blind. About 5 years ago, I was driving to work, and I thought that motorway signs were getting a bit fuzzy, and then I thought at work they were turning the lights down and computing was difficult. And I went to the optician thinking maybe I need some new glasses, and they detected that I had problems with both eyes.
Yes.
And within the space of 6 months, I'd lost a good 50% of my vision. Refused point blank to join blind veterans because it wasn't for me, independence, not really realising what they could actually offer. And then finally I accepted the fact that I needed some help, joined Blind Veterans, and then there's no looking back. I was unlucky enough to shortly after joining Blind Veterans, I had another accident, which took out the sight in my left eye. I got a shard of wood stuck in it. And to show what kind of organisation it was, as soon as Terry and the Sheffield found out, I was invited back to come and give him my confidence back. And we say it's a family, and it really is a family, that I was invited back and given the support I needed and the support that I wanted, but not made to feel, you know, anything bad about it. It doesn't feel like it's a charity. It feels like it's a family.
Yes.
And
yeah.
Because we're all forces, we have a kinship, and that's the big positive of it, is that whether you be, no matter what branch of the service, there is the friendly banter about that. But we all share the same things. We're all ex-servicemen, and we all have a visual impairment.
And
I think that's important, that being with people like yourself is very important, because I think, I know myself, I went through a period of denial, and it was, you know, oh, I don't want to apply for this, I don't want to apply for that, and I'm not going to train for long cane, and it is terrible, and it's only as it gets worse and you realise you're not doing things, you're not going out.
Well, with me, I spent a year plus, and that year was totally wasted, and it was me feeling sorry for myself.
Yeah,
and
I had that.
You know,
talking about this,
and not accepting the help. You know, I wasn't depressed, it's just everybody was having a go at me. And it wasn't me, it was everybody else. And there comes a time when you can either continue living like that,
which is
you're only doing yourself harm, or you accept the help that's been offered, and then you start moving along upwards.
I
was very lucky that the help came from Blind Veterans.
Yeah.
And I've not looked back. I've recently just got back off a battlefield tour, you know, my IT training. Blind Veterans, it's an organisation that wants me to be independent, and they give me the confidence and they give me the skills to be independent. They don't necessarily give me what I want, because I'd want a brand new car and I'd want, you know.
Wouldn't we all?
But if I need transport, they'll give me long cane training, so I'll get my independence, you know. So there are, you know, they assess people, and one of my famous stories is that I went into an assessment hoping to get one of these all singing, all dancing percolators that make you one cup of tea. And you can, and I came out with a blue ping pong ball. And that blue ping pong ball, so I could fill pans up, so I could fill cups up. And most people say, oh, were you upset? I was fascinated by it. I couldn't put it down. But it served my purpose. It enabled me the independence. I still use it. So when I want to boil an egg, I'll put it in the pan, fill the water up. And I'm terribly clumsy. So if I drop it on the floor and stand on it, you know, it cost me pence. So this thing may have cost £100, you know, 3-4 years ago. These ping pong balls cost me less than £1. And that's all I'd have spent, because you get more confidence than that. So I don't use it all the time. But like, I can tell when the water's boiling because it dances about. And it's highly amusing for sighted people. Because sighted people have their own ideas of how we operate. You know, they naturally assume that all we see is black. They naturally assume, you know, you have a guide dog, I have a guide dog. They naturally assume that the guide dog's in charge. So they'll tell, you know, I ask for directions and they tell the guide dog. And things like that.
It's amazing, isn't it? That side of it. Do you use the talking scales? You know, I discovered them when I went on a cookery course, And well, I thought that was amazing.
Well, one of the things is we have people do independent living skills.
Yes.
So they don't teach them how to cook. They teach them how they can cook safely. So,
yeah.
So if you can't cook when you go there, you're not going to end up as a Gordon Ramsay when you leave.
Yeah.
But you leave with all your fingers and you're not burned.
Yes.
So various things like talking microwaves, talking scales.
Yeah.
You know,
and you do all of that at the.
We do.
Yeah.
For anyone listening in who has served in the armed forces, and to get the message across that Blind Veterans UK is here for you to, if you meet our criteria, then please contact us. We are contactable through our website, which is www.noonealone.org.uk, and we also have a free phone number that you can contact us on, and that number is 0800 389 7979. The No One Alone campaign, there's been research undertaken that suggests there are 68,000 ex-service personnel out there who may have sight-related problems. And though we have strict criterion for becoming a member of the charity and we have a strict admissions process, we would actively encourage you to contact us on our web address or on the telephone number we provide. Then you could come and benefit from the special services that we have.
Yeah, I understand. Is this right, that if they're a fireman or a policeman had a sight...
Yes,
loss.
We have special provision for people who've worked in the civil defence.
Civil defence, that's what I was looking for.
People who've served in emergency services are also welcome to join the charity. The criteria for that, they must have been injured while in service, so the sight loss must have come while actually being injured at that time.
So would that cover someone like a paramedic that might have been attacked or something like
it,
that?
It would definitely include people like police, firemen, I think some ambulance workers and things like that.
Yeah.
But they would have to have been injured while in active service.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that apply then to people from the forces? People that have sort of joined and done the
National Service.
Yes, this is the 68,000 people.
So that they could still be members. They don't have to have been in combat.
No, they could still be members if they've actually been in the armed services, and they are suffering sight problems due to age related things like macular degeneration. Things like that, and they're eligible to apply to become a member of the charity.
Mm. Well, I do feel there's a great sympathy towards the armed forces at the moment in the country, because I know I've said this before. Just to give an example, at our church on Remembrance Day Sunday, there used to be, well, I think 10 years ago there was probably a handful, well, not a handful, but, not that many. Now it is packed. It is absolutely packed, and there is service personnel coming as well. And I've found a big change, in society. And something I know that my son was saying, how, a squaddy will get, what is it, about 18 or 19 thou a year or something pay. But for that, he has to sign a piece of paper that he's literally laying his life down, isn't he? He could get killed.
Oh, absolutely.
And yet there's some banker that's on, 150 and he's not going to get killed, is he, And my son's often remarked on that. These young people are laying their lives down, literally willing to give their life.
There seems to be extreme pride in the armed services at this time.
Yeah,
and I know that we have an enormous amount of pride in being able to work with people like Dennis and his colleagues. And it brings a lot of job satisfaction.
Yeah.
Well, that comes out in the staff. Because they're wonderful. I can't speak highly enough
of
the staff.
Right. Yeah,
and for me, they've actually opened the doors for me to practice, because I've recently done some IT training, and they've opened the doors. I can come in and practice my craft of teaching people the access software.
Yeah.
And I'm treated exactly the same as a member of staff. When it was snowing, I was expected to go out and clear the paths. There was no specialist treatment. You stay in and enjoy the warm coffee and biscuits,
absolutely,
Dennis, while we clean the path. Yeah. It was, here's a snow shovel.
Yeah.
But that's what the charity's about. It's not a case of that. It's independence. Mm. And whatever you need for your independence, they'll strive to give it to you. And whatever you need to achieve that, it's as much or as little as you want. No one, there's no big hammer forcing you. There's no, anything like that. It's not forced upon you. You don't have to. But I've seen people arrive. They do week-long courses at Sheffield, and I've seen people arrive as strangers, and they leave as best mates.
Yeah.
And halfway through on a Wednesday, you can see when they. The first day, like when you join the forces, you're nervous, there's all this new stuff, there's new people, and you slowly build up, and then they may not see each other again for a year, but they make friends for life, and they'll bump in. And I've bumped into members that I've known since my time, and I've not seen them for ages. You bump into them, and it's as if you've not left, and then you go your separate ways again.
So. The people that come then, it's kind of like a hotel, in a way. They come in to stay, aren't they?
Oh, yes, it's
and there are activities for them to do. How many people do you cater for? And do they come on their own, or do they come with a partner? Or how does that work?
They can come with a partner.
Yes.
They come on their own, whichever suits them. But if they're coming back to do, say, IT training, which is then we'll book them in to come for the week. We'll assess what training they need, and then they'll be given a program. Which will give them their lessons.
Yes.
In the evenings, we tend to meet in the trainees lounge, and there's activities organised there. YouTube is very popular.
Yes.
People remembering old songs and comedy sketches. So that, and we play games up there. We've got a big Jenga, which can be quite exciting. Mm. Playing that and coffees, and we have a wine and cheese party.
Yeah.
So it is like that. Hotel would be it would be a very high expensive hotel, because everything is catered for you.
Yeah.
We invite the people in, and I use the word invite. Mm. We have welfare officers dotted around the country who we've got 26 in all. And they cover the length and the breadth of the country, and they engage with local social services departments, and that's another area where we identify potential members for the charity. An example where we would get members from here in Sheffield, we have good relations with the eye clinic at the Royal Hallamshire, and there's a lady down there called Karen Dolan.
Oh, and
Karen is ex-services, she is.
Yes.
Fantastic lady. And Karen is ex-services herself, so she knows of the charity.
Mm.
And anyone who comes in for their eyes testing or with a problem that she identifies as having served, she will suggest that they, and does actually have application packs that she will give to them. And Karen is an extremely good contact for us.
She's
great.
You go and see Karen.
Oh,
you come out with all these gizmos make your life better.
Mm.
Every time I go and see her. And it's like going and seeing my daughter. I walk in and she flings her arms around and hugs me. She is fantastic. I cannot praise her enough. And when I've been in when she's been training people, and I was a teacher, and she's superb at what she's doing.
Could we get her on the show?
Well, she's busy all the time. This is trouble with Karen. I would
suggest that I'm not busy.
I'm not. But she does clinics and things, And she is very much hands-on. She is really good.
She is.
I was having difficulty, and I needed something that would help me do some specific work. And she found me something. And it's amazing. And, you tell her what the problem is, and she'll find something.
Well, that's what our rovies do.
Yeah.
That you tell them what you want to achieve, and they will put things in place for you to achieve that. And so, one of the main things that annoyed me is I couldn't read my own letters, and I couldn't tell the time. So they sorted that problem out by talking watches and various other bits of equipment. So I can actually do that, and that is a big positive when you can actually read your own mail, because it's that independence thing again, and knowing the time. I mean, the only problem with talking watches, though, as soon as someone uses one, everybody has to check theirs.
I always think they sound like Mickey Mouse voice.
Well, it is.
I find them annoying.
Well, that's the bit I find annoying, is that someone will press it and then everybody will check to see if their watch is saying the same time. So you get a cacophony.
You're right in the middle when you're trying to tell them something.
Yeah.
But a lot of places just don't have the resources.
No.
I mean, we're very lucky in Sheffield.
Mm.
But I've talked to people when I've been to different places and, you know, and asked them and said, well, what kind of services are there where you live? And there's nothing. When I've said, well, we've got this and this in Sheffield, they've gone, crikey, wow, it sounds fantastic. Mm. And we do tend to take it for granted. But we are lucky, really. Mm.
Yeah. And that's what I say about me. I'm so lucky to be a member of Blind Veterans.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, because it is a bit patchy around the country.
Yes.
But Blind Veterans are as straight as a die. You know, it doesn't matter how long you served, what rank you were, you know, whatever you need to fulfil the goal of independence, they'll set to. Plus they do respite holidays. And I've recently got back from a battlefield tour.
Mm.
Which was organised for blind. The young. I mean, I'm 50, so I'm a younger blind veteran.
Yeah.
So as a group, we went out and toured.
Whereabouts did you go?
Ypres.
Oh, right.
We went to the Menin Gate and had the ceremony at the Menin Gate.
Yeah.
And it was quite moving, and as ex-forces, we have a kindred spirit
with
that kind of event. So that was very well done. We're very well organised, and obviously, with us all being visually impaired, well organised in that we didn't face any major problems you may face if you decide to go on holiday with sighted people. That sort of thing.
Yeah, because I know Trina and I, because my father was in the forces, and I think your father.
My late husband did his national service.
Yeah, and we're thinking, can we use that as a criteria to get into blind?
Yeah.
But I was told no.
No, sorry.
I think that he was sort of the last years of the national services.
Yeah.
They finished it not long after he'd done.
Yeah, we get national service. There's no distinction about what you served and how long you served, whether you've served one day or 22 years, whether you was national service or whether you volunteered. It doesn't enter into the fray at all. You're treated as, I'm treated as Dennis, member of Blind Veterans, exactly the same as if there was a colonel or a major. We're treated exactly the same.
Yeah, just something that intrigued me was that it was actually, the charity started in 1915.
It did.
And the centenary is in 2015, which is only the year after next. So it'll be very interesting. Hopefully we'll still be here in 2 years' time. We'll have to have some celebratory interview, I think.
Yeah, I think it'll be a year of good celebrations that year.
We're
already thinking up ideas and things and themes for that celebration.
Yeah. And it'd be good to invite other visually impaired people in Sheffield, perhaps.
Well, we recently had a name change for 1 year ceremony.
That's right.
Where we invited members from around Sheffield to come, and the Royal Engineers brought their robot and cut the cake.
Yeah.
And we had a buffet and an afternoon of all military people together talking about the military. You know, pull up a sandbag and all that. And it was a real good day for everybody involved.
Yeah.
And the reason that the charity changed its name, quite a simple one, that St Dunstan's, when and the charity has the greatest respect for its history, but it was appreciated that, to talk in modern language, it needed a clearer brand so that people could identify what the charity's aims were.
Mm.
And it consulted, as it always does, it consulted with its members, it consulted with the community. The people came up from London and invited local people from the Sheffield area to come to the Fulwood Road Centre and to tell us, share their opinions about the ideas for a name change, and it was decided that calling the charity Blind Veterans UK was a much clearer identity.
Oh, yeah,
and
much better.
It said exactly what it says on the tin, that it was clear what the charity did.
Mm.
And it is fair to say that for some younger generations, they did not know whether St Dunstan's was a church, a school, or...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because I'd heard stories about little people, well, maybe not old ladies, but, oh, do you christen children at St Dunstan's and things like that? So it was a lot of confusion, wasn't there?
How do you get the funding, then, is it?
It's from public donations, legacies in wills and trusts, from campaigns highlighting the issues, people having served for the country and coming home injured and what have you, and raising awareness both in within industry and within you know, communities such as Sheffield, and people are always contacting the centre and asking if they can make a donation or offer a gift in a will, and we have a wills and trust department. And we also have an active fundraising department that do that work on the charity's behalf.
Is that... I've noticed at times when I've been in supermarkets, there are young people there that are cadets, and they're linked in some way to different services, and they're doing bag packing.
Yes.
Because I always say to them, why are you doing this? And they'll say that they're fundraising. I'm assuming then they're fundraising
for
that.
There's such enthusiasm, as Bill was saying... earlier on in the conversation, particularly around schools and things, they're aware of the armed forces in a way seemingly that's not been known for a number of years, and they get actively involved when they can. And other facets of the armed forces do things like the cadet challenge and things, and they also raise money and donate it back.
So do you actively go out into schools and colleges?
Oh, yeah,
we go
basically anywhere where anybody will have us, really.
But likewise, the members do fundraising as well.
They do.
When the Llandudno Centre entered, some members walked from Brighton to Sheffield to land, raising money.
We call that the Centre to Centres March. From the set off from Brighton and took the key to... A symbolic key to Llandudno.
We do have members that are highly active. The one at Llandudno, Billy Baxter, he actually holds the blind motorcycle record.
All right.
So he put himself on a motorcycle and went down, I think it's 120 miles an hour.
Oh,
It's that kind of, you know, and he had the full support and backup of the charity, in that, you know, it wasn't... we have a member who walks marathons, you know, it's quite, you know, as members we would like to be in the forces. We like doing that because it's taking control of our own destiny and giving something back, because you know, you've got to give something back. I'm lucky enough to be a member, so I've got to give something back.
That's absolutely runs through the very core of a lot of the more active people. I've just been talking to one of our members called David Cranston, who lives up in the northeast, and he just completed the London Marathon at the weekend. And David showed me his medal that he's got, and he set himself a time of 5 hours and did it in 5 hours and 15 minutes. His feet are rather sore today, but he's done a remarkable job.
Does the government contribute at all, or is
there are things like Veterans Agency support grants for people living in the charity's portfolio of properties, of which we have a considerable number. So people living in the charity's properties may receive some Veterans Agency support and things like that. But our money is raised by fundraising department and people leaving, as I said earlier, gifts in the form of legacies in wills and trusts and things.
Yeah, there's certainly, I know they help the heroes, they see a lot of people collecting for that, don't you? And I know you've said, Trina, you wanted to go up and hug them.
Well, I just think it just makes you sort of more and more aware of, you know, we need these people.
Absolutely.
To live. You know, we wouldn't have the quality of life that we've got without people like this. I get really upset with all the cutbacks.
Well,
it does upset me that.
It really is nice to see. I served in the 80s, and it was completely different then. It was as if, you know, there wasn't this sort of respect.
Mm.
And so to actually see that sort of respect these days makes me really proud.
Yeah.
You know,
the
people at Wootton Bassett, you know, the fact that the country's accepted that, you know, that respect for people.
Well,
it's
literally laying your life down. Literally laying your life down, isn't it?
Mm.
And they tend to be so modest. If you ask, you know, some of the people I consider heroes, they wouldn't hear of you calling them an hero.
Mm.
And it's that modesty as well.
It's
just looking after your mates. It's just normal.
To
us, looking at what some people do, you think, you know.
Mm.
And it's not a soft option. It's damned hard.
It is.
Doing that, the training, as you say, the discipline.
Yeah.
For especially when you think out there, you know, discipline seems to be something that we've forgotten about.
Well, it's the military of looking after. Mm. You know, you have to trust the man or woman next to you with your life, and it's doing that. And a lot of these younger people are actually showing that, you know, having been to the First World War graveyard, it's the same spirit. The spirit has not changed, and it's pleasing to see that.
Yeah, I know my wife and younger son, they regularly go over to, you know, all northern France and go to all the graveyards. And my son, it puts me to shame, really, because he's more into that than I am, you know, and he's 17 at the time when he was going over there, 16 and 17. You know?
Well, once again, having been to the Menin Gate, they do that every night, and it's quite a moving ceremony. Maybe we need something like that here. The War Memorial in Staffordshire, maybe something like that. Just to show our continued support.
Yeah, and I think that is important, that it is continued.
Mm.
Because it's what we're about, isn't it?
And also something that surprised me, then, and I saw an American magazine, it was a few months ago, and there was a section of it was like a sort of glossy magazine, you know, sort of in the mainstream, and there was a section about the armed forces, you know, and what they were doing, and you know, I was really amazed, you know, because of that incredible patriotism about their, you know, men and women that were out serving, you know, and it was part of the magazine. It wasn't a military magazine. It was just, and I thought, wow, that is amazing, though. You know, it's, again, it's that respect, you know,
it
for
is.
What they were doing,
well,
you know, in the mainstream, you know.
That's why the charity is really pushing with our No One Alone campaign.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to get Terry to read the phone number and email. I'm sorry I'm determined that people will.
Absolutely.
For their benefit.
Yes.
Don't miss out on it.
For anyone who has listened in this afternoon that does feel that they may be eligible to join Blind Veterans UK, the way to do that is either www.noonealone.org.uk or by using the free phone number 0800 389 7979. Please contact us if you feel that you can benefit from the charity's services.
Mm. And one of the charity's other funds, well, what they do well is they have themed weeks, and they have archery, and they have sonic rifle shooting, bowling, and recently at Sheffield we had a photographic week. And you tell people who don't have a sight problem that people with their, you know, blind people are going to take photographs. They can't understand the logic. How do they know? But they all went out, and some of the photos they took were very professional indeed.
Yeah.
You know, they showed them on the wall at Sheffield.
They come down, and one of the areas that they like to come to is actually this picturesque station that we have with all the waterfalls and things outside. That makes a dream ticket for any would-be photographer, and the peace gardens and all that. So it's emblazoned all over the place, the photographs that they've took. And they really are impressive.
Yeah. Well, Sheffield, you know, is the birthplace of the first photographic society.
Right.
Did you know that?
No.
Oh, yeah,
right.
Sheffield, yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah, which is, you know, quite amazing.
Well, I know Trina will be embarrassed by this, but Trina here is an artist, and she produces the most amazing stuff despite her sight loss.
Mm.
So, you know,
It is amazing, you know, what can be produced.
That's it. People can use sight loss as an excuse not to try. And, you know, blind veterans have taught me that my sight loss is not an excuse. If I don't want to do it, I don't have to do it. But if I say I can't do it because I'm blind, that is not an excuse. Because
that's
there's
right,
so much to enable me to do various things, with the photographic course, with the cooking. You know, with the archery, I went archery, and you know, I couldn't do archery when I could see, but I really enjoyed enjoyed doing it. And there is a way for anybody with a sight impairment to do there's no reason not to do it. Being blind is not an excuse.
The charity, the centres that we have, for anybody that's out there who is thinking of making that call to join, should please be aware that all the centres are geared for people with a visual impairment, a vision impairment. They are safe places to be. And for people who may not, they may be lonely at home and ex services that have the sight problems, then the charity is a wonderful place to come and feel part of a family and have some companionship and things like that.
That's really good. But interesting what you were saying though about sight loss not being an excuse. I mean, I play the piano, and I know these guys, you ever heard me play, and when I make a mistake, I don't think, oh, it's because I can't see. I just feel really annoyed that I've made a mistake, because it's no excuse. I should be playing a perfect, you know, like any musician, if you're playing something, it should be perfect. And I know somebody said after one concert, fancy, and I know I've made a few mistakes, somebody said, oh, fancy doing that, and you can't see very well. And it really annoyed me, because I thought, that's not the issue. because I'm a musician and I made a mistake, you know. I know what you mean about that. Because why should it be an excuse?
Well, in my younger days, my uncle was visually impaired, and I used to love listening to him playing the piano. And I asked him, how did he play the piano when he can't see the keys? And he pointed out that the keys don't move. He says, you know, they're not moving up and down. I know the key's there, so...
They are static. But something else, though, that I thought was interesting, because you're saying you have a bit of a crossover with Sheffield Wardside for the Blind. You do meet up, don't you, with the...
Well, Dennis made reference to our Rovies. Well, for people who wonder, what is a Rovie? A Rovie is a rehabilitation officer for the visually impaired. And our rehab officers, or Rovies, professionally, have contacts with all a lot of other organisations that work with people with sight problems. And we've recently had, they attended one of our open day or events, and we've had a crossover of staff going down there. Some of our members actually avail themselves of that service, and we've traded information about when we've been setting up our themed activity weeks and looking for who are the people with the experience of working with people with sight problems. Well, they're one of the organisations that we've tapped into and have kindly given us advice about things like walking and rambling and things. Now they set up their events for their people, and we've kind of borrowed their ideas, and we'll include them in some of our plans.
There is a Ramblers Association in Sheffield, isn't there, for blind, partially sighted people?
And we're trying to not reinvent wheels, although the charity historically has been at the forefront of developing things for people with sight problems. But we, you know, don't reinvent the wheel. If somebody else is doing something, they're doing it perfectly well. You know, talk to them and see what... So that's where we... You know, trade on the advice.
Go on.
Your Brighton hotel or centre. Is the one that does quite a lot of sports.
It does. It has. They have a very active, vibrant sports and recreation team, and they organise all kinds of events, from kayaking, climbing mountains and all kinds of things, tandem riding and all manner of things that they get involved in. And we've been, the Sheffield Centre, I had a meeting only last week with the head of the Sports and Recreation Department down there,
yeah.
And we're looking to develop an active outdoor event for members wishing to come to Sheffield,
mm.
And that we're looking to do that in February,
mm.
And that's kind of just started in the planning process. Mm. And the same is at Llandudno as well. They had a week last week, an activity week. They've got a sports
mm.
and recreation department too,
mm.
and they went abseiling and all kinds of things.
Yeah.
Mm. So they really do get the members actively involved mm. in doing the kinds of things that they did when they were in service.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, shall we have a piece of music? We don't normally talk as long as this, actually, but you've been such fantastic guests that we've got carried away.
Before you play your music, we would like to thank you for
yeah.
inviting
yeah.
us down.
Well, thank you for coming.
Pleasure.
It's been
yeah.
really
yeah.
interesting.
Thank you.
Mm. And if you have served in the forces and you have an eyesight problem, do
yes.
do get in touch. You,
mm.
yeah.
terrible thing to say, but you will not look back.
Mm.
Yeah.
You will not look back.
Mm.
Superb.
We'll,
right.
We'll take our cue from the music then.
Yes.
Right.
When you're making
yeah.
your exit.
Yeah.
We will.
Yeah. Okay.
The first piece of music on the programme is by Spandau Ballet and it's Life Hard. Spandau Ballet and Lifeline. We've got the regular feature now. It's a bit belated, with our guests having monopolised the first part of the show. But we've now got the quiz. Right. Voted one of the first worst films ever, The Quickening was a sequel to which film? Question two, which president of the USA was the tallest man ever to hold the post? Mm. Question three, popular in Scotland, what is the Gay Gordons? Question four, extra virgin refers to which food product? Question five, the Torchwood character Captain Jack Harkness first appeared in which television programme? Question six, what is the term for a liquid sprayed onto a finished artwork to preserve it and prevent smudging? Question seven, the Grand Order of Water Rats is a charity which draws its members from which industry? Question eight, what is the name of Scotland's deepest loch? Question nine, what family celebration falls on the fourth Sunday of Lent? And finally, question 10, which comedian had the catchphrase of, "Ooh, you are awful, but I like you"? And I'll give you the answers towards the end of the second half of the show.
Right, there were some good questions there. The first got me thinking. I, for the life of me, can't remember what
well,
the film was called.
I would have got the number eight wrong, the name of Scotland's deepest loch.
Right.
I thought it was...
Well, don't say.
I thought it was Loch Ness, but it isn't.
Oh, right.
I'll not tell you what the answer is until the second half of the show.
Right. Well, I thought it was Loch Ness.
Are we on
there?
Yes, we're back. I've just done the quiz questions.
Oh, right.
So have you got an article for us to discuss?
Yes,
our guests have left the building.
Yeah, and honestly, weren't they amazing?
They were, yes.
Yeah.
And if there are people out there that were former servicemen and women, don't be afraid to contact these people, because if you are suffering with sight loss, you will get really brilliant help and support.
Yeah, yeah. I was made very welcome. I went there last week and they showed me around the premises, and it's the most beautiful house. Honestly.
Oh yes,
so
yeah.
And what's remarkable about it is it's in this lovely countryside, yet we're in the on Forward Road on Sheffield.
Yes.
And the way it's built in like a hollow, and it's and again, anyone with a visual impairment, have got all these, you know, banisters, I suppose, for want of a better word, but special banisters where you can hold on. And you're not going to trip over what's supporting the banister. It made me very welcome indeed.
Right.
But just to keep along on a sort of, it's not really a military note, but there's an interesting article here about the awful tragedy, you know, in Boston.
Oh, crikey,
which is so terrible, isn't it? But it was saying about how the human decency has sort of shone through.
Yes.
You know, with all the sort of horror of it. And yet people were sort of doing amazing stuff. And I'd just read it, because, again, we seem to be on a sort of inspirational session, aren't we, at the minute? Because I certainly think those two guys are amazing, aren't they?
Yes.
And an inspiration. So, anyway, it says, the bomb blast that tore apart the Boston Marathon on Monday plunged the heart of the city into chaos. Yet those caught up in the confusion soon noticed something amazing. The figures of police officers and civilians running towards the blast, driven by a sense of duty or compassion to do what they could to help. And it says, whenever such tragedies occur, whether in Boston or Baghdad, our first impulse is to sympathise and to mourn. Yet if there is the thinnest of silver linings, it is that they invariably confirm that the good in humanity far outweighs the bad. For every bomber, for every lunatic, there are 100, 1,000 souls who are inspired by disaster to support their neighbours, their communities, even complete strangers. Witness the Bostonians who took runners into their own homes, or the competitors who trekked to local hospitals to give blood, or the restaurants that refused to charge those trapped on the streets without wallets or phones. Indeed, whatever the bomber's intention, it is striking that the target of their attack was itself one of the great expressions of human kindness. As will happen in London this weekend, well, again, this was written just before the marathon, wasn't there, at the weekend. The streets were lined with thousands of people who wanted nothing more than to encourage the runners, and with volunteers who were doing all they could to speed their way. Yeah, I thought that was really inspiring. Mm. I thought that was really good, the way, you know, people do come to the fore, don't they,
in
the crisis?
Yeah.
And, it's very, very good.
Mm.
Just to sort of lighten the mood a bit. Now, when you were teachers, Dom and Trina...
Yes.
When your pupils made an error, did you use red ink to, put a circle around it?
No, I never liked it.
Now, did you use red ink?
I did. There was one point where we were told to use green instead of red for whatever reason.
Oh, yeah.
I believed... in being positive about errors, and there is something, you can find something in a child's work that is positive. And I think going through absolutely covering it in red ink is just sending out a message to most children, which results in them thinking, well, I'm hopeless at this, so why should I bother? You've got to use psychology with children. And I mean, I can always remember when I used to ask questions, and you'd always get one kid to put their hand up, and they'd come out with something, and all the rest would look like open mouth going, what? And I used to sort of go, well, actually, I hadn't thought of that. That was a good idea. And then all of the kids would look at this child as if to say, my God, that's a genius out there. And I think you've got to do that. It's, if you turn around and you're sarcastic or nasty, that child will never put their hand up again. And I don't think anybody's got that right.
Stop
that.
Yeah.
A good teacher will use everything to make something generate within the children to lead to them getting a good education. And I think that's important. I don't like what was happening with the national curriculum and with inspections and everything, and what the expectations are of people teach, what teachers are expected to do. And I don't think it's always for the good of the children. They put on a show at that moment in time, and it's preparation leading up to that moment in time, and then a lax back into whatever they were doing before. There's still good teachers out there, but I think there's a lot that just go through the motions.
Mm. Well, it was interesting because it's interesting what your comments, Trina, because I didn't realise that red ink has been banned in some schools because they said it's just
good.
Yeah, because apparently they feel it's derogatory, it's making the child feel rubbish.
Mm-hmm.
And to be fair, I do remember when I was at junior school, because I had a very strange education. When I was at junior school, I seemed to find work very difficult, and I was always making mistakes and errors. And I can remember getting a book back that was literally covered in red ink from the top, every single line. And I did feel sort of,
that's
just rubbish.
Yeah. One of the things that we were suggested to us is that you pick the five worst errors in a piece and you highlight those, but beyond five, you don't.
Yeah, it's too
don't
much.
Do the rest.
Yeah.
So that way, at least you've got something